When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football
heaven. And welcome back. And just as we're coming on the air, more expansion news being reported. We'll update you on everything in a minute, but Ross Dellinger, who was here the other day, is reporting on Yahoo that the ACC... In addition to Stanford and Cal, is looking at SMU. Yes, you heard me correctly. SMU. Okay, let's start the hour off. It is all about the Dogs. Is that right? Yeah. What's the biggest issue? It's always yourself. We've heard that one before in the SEC. So last time this happened was Southern Cal. It's amazing. All the times Alabama has started number one has not ended. Have they gone wire to wire? Obviously they haven't. They have come close. Cal and Florida State, the last two. And Bama wants to move people out of the way and ground and pound. That's what Nick Saban was talking about when he brought in Tommy Reeves. This is the differential. Now, the quarterback play got a little bit better. In 18, they ran the ball less, but why would you run the ball with Tua, Bryce Young, and Mac Jones? And when you look at the bevy of number one first-round wide receivers, that there is a reason. Although they had Najee Harris in there and Gibbs, so they had a couple of good running backs. Auburn announced today, the president of Auburn announced that they can roll Toomer's corner again, and maybe they'll have some big wins to do that for. During the Harsin era, there wasn't that many opportunities to roll, but this has been stopped ever since the ugly Updike incident of 12 years ago. And we mentioned we'll talk to the commissioner, bottom of the hour. Let's get to the calls at 855-242-7285. Mike is in Missouri. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing, Mr. Feinbaum?
We are doing great. Thank you very much.
Hey. I love everything you do, long-time listener and watcher. I just wanted to ask you your professional opinion about your career in media.
Wow. It's been varied. I've done a lot of different things, from being a sports writer to a radio host to working here.
Yeah, that's very good, but you also have a very good knowledge of music, and you seem to be very diversified in your activities.
Well, I think that comes from growing up, being very aware and very interested in other things. Obviously sports has been a big part of my life, but I follow many, many different other fields. And I think that also comes from being a writer. To be a writer, there's a level of curiosity that I think you have to have, and I feel fortunate that I've always had that. I mean, I love that part of my career. I don't do it anymore, but it was a very critically important period of my life.
Why do you say it was critical?
Well, because I think it helped form everything else that I did. I think especially being a reporter, you learn how to seek information and especially the truth. And then you try to balance whatever information you have and then try to disseminate that information into a cogent story. And then when I became a columnist after that, it became a different level of that, where you're reporting, you're gathering, you're writing, but you're also offering a distinct point of view.
Oh, very good point. I appreciate your insight. I enjoy watching you, but I do have to ask you a personal question.
Okay, sure.
What happened to Millie from Rolla?
Well, Millie from Rolla
was... Because she seemed pretty amorous with you.
Well, that is a fact. It will come out in my memoirs that Millie and I have three children together. Millie, unfortunately, passed away a couple of years ago.
And I did not know that.
Yeah, she was a wonderful lady. Probably the most interesting thing Millie ever said on this show is that she stalked Joe Namath when she was in school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I feel badly about one thing, because I'm fortunate enough to have covered Alabama, and I know Joe pretty well. I have his number, and we communicate every once in a while. And I almost brought them together, but I was afraid, even in her elder years, if she started stalking Joe again, he would never forgive me. So
I
will go to my grave with mixed emotions about not hooking Millie and Joe up. I mean, what is Joe now? Is he 80 yet? I mean, Joe could have handled it. I mean, he was pursued by every model and actress in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s and probably as recently as today. Hey, Mike, thank you very much. We talked about that one day, but she was serious about her unrequited love for Joe Namath.
She made him a lamp.
Yeah, she made him something, a lamp. Mm-hmm. Was there some hidden meaning? In a lampshade? I don't know if I want to know that. How about Justin in Kansas? Hello, Justin.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoyed your interview with Ryan. That was great, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm in the heart of Big 12 country, and so I'm probably going to be a contrarian here, but what nobody's talking about is that the Big 12 was left for dead in 2011. Missouri left, Nebraska left, everybody left. And now the head coach of Missouri, Eli Drinkwitz, wants to criticize conference realignment when the Big 12 is just trying to survive. And they've done a great job at doing that. They just added Arizona, Arizona State, Giant State. They added Colorado. And I don't understand why Eli Drinkwitz, Lane Kiffin, to a certain extent, Nick Saban, which, you know, he's not really saying anything bad. But why are they criticizing conference realignment when these conferences are just trying to stay alive?
Justin, I completely agree with you, and I think one of the great success stories in recent history is where the Big 12 has come from in 2 years, because they were dead. It was impossible to believe that they would survive without the two biggest schools in the conference. I don't really understand Drinkwitz in his defense. Missouri was he was not at Missouri when they joined the SEC, but he knows the history. And I find whenever somebody making $6 million, $8 million, or in Kiffin's case, $10 million a year, you know, stand up and talk about how sad it is for, you know, what these young people have to go through while they're, you know, behind the scenes feverishly raiding anyone's roster that they can and trying to make sure that the NIL money is good enough. It's ridiculous, and I my tolerance for that type of hypocrisy is pretty low.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really nice to hear from you. Mike is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Mike. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Now, where do I start? I mean, it seems like you've become an anti-Bamite lately. I mean, I don't understand it. All these gloom and doom predictions. You know, if it wasn't for the University of Alabama, you'd be selling popcorn at MetLife Stadium at Jets games. I'm really surprised, Paul.
Is there a question somewhere in this mic?
Yeah, where do you get off doing that? I mean, what, did you just pull your crazy eight ball out of your closet and turn it upside down, and it said this is the year Nick Saban fails miserably? I mean, I don't get it.
Do you crave attention, or what? I completely don't get the question, considering I predicted yesterday that Alabama would go to the playoffs this year. But again, I don't have all the information that you do.
Oh, so now you flip-flop since the last time?
No, I didn't flip-flop. I said that yesterday, and I said it before yesterday, but you choose
you
to
sure
hear what you want.
You sure didn't say that SEC Media Days.
I did.
No.
Okay, I am not responsible for all the things I say. I guess Mike is. Okay. By the way,
yes.
Selling popcorn at MetLife Stadium could be my next career after that call. We'll take a break. The commissioner of the SEC will join us in a few minutes.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back. Thanks for being here Tuesday afternoon, and let's check in with David in Alabama. Hello, David.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Awesome. Hey, I was just going to see what you was hearing about the quarterback situation out of Alabama, and also I was hoping Larry would be on, and maybe you could hook me and him up because he's my hero.
You know, we haven't heard from Larry in a while. I hope he's okay. Every time we don't hear from Larry, it makes me think something is going on. As far as the quarterback situation, I think it's a little bit early. It seems like Milroe is the quarterback to beat, although a lot of people believe he will be beaten. Hey, thank you very much. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Peter is in Florida. Hello, Peter.
Paul, how you doing today?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Paul, you know, I've been thinking a lot about all the realignment news, and I got some thoughts, and I want to run it by you, okay? Now, I'm 27, and I'm trying to think, what will the game look like when I'm 50, 60 years old? Because as I see it, it's getting closer and closer to that NFL model. And I'm really wondering, as the years go on and some of the older generation obviously goes away, how much is it going to be palatable, do you think, to the average fan as college football might become like minor league sports? What do you think about that, Paul?
Well, Peter, I think it's well on its way. And, you know, I start thinking what has changed in college football over 30, 40, 50 years. The biggest change is television, where if you go back to the 70s, into the 80s, until 84 when the Supreme Court decision happened, Alabama, Florida, Auburn, they were on TV maybe three times a year. And we all know what's happened since then. So that's been the biggest change. The conference realignment has been going on for some time. It just has not been going on with the rapidity and the recklessness that it is right now. You know, the money part is interesting because it seems like we're heading toward players sharing some of the profits, and that does make them either employees or professional. And you can choose your poison and how you want to describe that. Now, the one thing that hasn't happened is less interest. Yeah, the tickets are more expensive, the experience is not much fun, but people still go every week or watch it on television.
I hear you, Paul. I do. And I think that's something that we don't have to worry about for the next 15, 20 years. But as I mentioned, you know, I feel like I'm a pretty traditional guy. I love the traditions of college football, but I see my friends that are NFL fans. They don't care what team wins the game. They follow players. They follow their fantasy league.
I think you're dead on. You know, I haven't mentioned the elephant in the room, and that's the gambling part of it, which yep. I mean, 5 or 10 years ago, you couldn't even speak about that, and now it's just part and parcel to the industry, and it is. I can't speak to it with the authority that you can, but I'm aware of it because I have people ask me all the time about, hey, what do you think about this guy? There is an inherent danger though when we become more interested in that than our local team or our favorite team.
I completely agree, Paul. And then the last point I'll leave you with is, as the game becomes more and more like the NFL model, we all know how successful the NFL is, Paul, but there can only be one NFL. And as it gets closer and closer to that, I'm talking 30, 40 years down the line, I have a hard time. The one thing that people love about college football so much is those traditions that we speak about, the pageantry. And as that gets stripped away and the generations go on, and I have some concerns, Paul.
Well, Peter, thank you. Thank you very, very much. You be well. Let's grab one more call here before the break. And Will is in Missouri. Hey, Will, go right ahead.
How you doing, Paul?
We're doing well. Thank you.
I had a question posed to me because I'm originally from Louisiana. I live in Missouri, and I got a bunch of Kansas fans out here and Ohio State fans, and they said, well, what makes the SEC so special? I said, you could throw Florida or LSU in any of the other conferences, and they would dominate, and they're the second-tier teams of the SEC.
Well, I think you're right about that, Will. And to me, there are a lot of reasons why it's so special, but it is deep, and I think some of the competitive part of it speaks for itself.
And I got one more question. What would college football look like if it was done like World Cup soccer? you take certain teams and just make them play each other and just go for it all.
William, it would be chaotic. It might be exciting, but it would be untenable. As much as we like to talk about how events like last week are unprecedented, can you imagine what would happen if suddenly your favorite team got knocked out or didn't qualify? There's just so many elements to that just don't work in college athletics.
I agree with you. Well, you have a good day, Paul.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a busy one. We've had a great show already, talking obviously about what has been going on in and around college athletics. We had Luke Fickell on. We talked about the Manziel documentary. We mentioned Dellinger's piece a minute ago that talks about the ACC now expanding its search beyond even California and Stanford, that SMU is perhaps on the docket. I'm not sure at what point that league will stop, but that is the latest. And when we come back, we'll talk to the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Everyone knows it has been an unbelievable, unprecedented period in college athletics, so it gives us great pleasure to talk to the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, a man generally considered the most influential person in the sport. And we're delighted to welcome Commissioner Sankey to our program. Commissioner, you follow this like everyone else, and we're very curious and thanking you for your time today to get your reaction to where things are and have been going in college athletics.
Oh, thanks, Paul. Good to be with you. I was just reflecting quickly on your introduction about momentous and significant times, and I was actually trying to figure out how many of those types of introductions we've had together over the last, 7 or 8 years. That summer of 20, and then you flip forward to 2021, which relates here in our expansion, and then last year was a Big Ten. So we seem to have the ability to generate a lot of interest, even in the off season around college sports.
Many people, Commissioner, are very concerned about what has been going on, but I think the questions are also being asked about where is the SEC in all this. While you're still digesting Texas and Oklahoma for play a year from now, where is this league, and what can you tell us about that?
I would submit we're in an enormously healthy place, so we're not in the middle of the current movement efforts. As I was kind of linking in via Zoom, conversations about yet another conference and our autonomy grouping looking here and there for members, we're going to be constantly attentive. I'll go back to what seems like a year ago now, just to a few weeks to media days in Nashville. And I talked about our focuses on our growth to 16. When you look at the 16 universities that will soon all be affiliated officially with the Southeastern Conference, when we add Oklahoma and Texas, I think that's the envy of everyone in college football, from a strength, from a success, from a support standpoint. We're not, I'm not a recruiter. I've said that repeatedly. We have a responsibility to look from an interest standpoint of what's happening around us. And what we did last week behind the scenes is had different types of daily communications with our campuses to say, here's what we understand is taking place. At the end of the week, we concluded with a video conference of our presidents and chancellors. For me today, speaking on their behalf, really strong alignment with that group. Very clear that there's not something out there that we should be reaching for or engaging in our own level of recruitment. We began yesterday morning with our athletics directors, and over the weekend we had new elements of that update, but the focus is on the Southeastern Conference, how we build upon our strength, how we prepare, obviously, for the year that's ahead. We're going to be starting soccer here just in a matter of days, and football in a matter of weeks. And then look to our future when we grow to 16.
Everyone is playing chess games with various schools and various conferences, as it's unavoidable to keep up with, or impossible to keep up with. But how do you respond when people are playing these chess games? You were very emphatic a couple of years ago that you didn't call Texas and Oklahoma. That story has been well documented. Do you hear from various universities? Are there back channels, or do you have a wall up that protects you from that?
If I have a wall up, I covered it up quickly before I turned on the camera, since this is like the widest angle camera apparently I've ever used. No, there's not a wall. And I'll offer this, whether it's acknowledged, there's a respect for our colleague conferences. There was plenty of criticism back in 2021 at the surprise nature of our Oklahoma and Texas announcement. Yet from that point forward, we and those two universities and our entire conference has sought to be orderly in the process and respectful in our communication. And I think we've done that. I've opined publicly that I think the speculation and some of the pronouncements we've seen since that time about growth or directional growth is problematic. And even for me, with the security of the Southeastern Conference, whether it was Friday afternoon or through the day Saturday, fielding phone calls, which really were more conversations. What do you think's happening? There's nobody calling me. Seeking or demanding entry, a lot of commentary publicly. You know, it just wasn't one of those great feelings to work in college sports in my experience. And again, I take responsibility where we've made moves, but there was something different last week about really the still questions around the existence of the Pac-12 conference, given its long and storied history.
Commissioner, there's so many important questions I do want to get to, and the realignment is certainly part of it. But one last question on that, because we are seeing things that we're never really comfortable or expected to see with coast-to-coast conferences now. You've been very firm about the SEC and its geographical footprint. Is there anything that would prompt you or want you to change that?
Well, not that we've seen based on current circumstances. There again is a strength when I look at evaluations of avid fans. We lead, and really there's no comparison in what we've established. When we went through the process in 21, Paul, plenty of commentary about ESPN directing these moves. That's a myth. That's false. It was two universities who wanted a new affiliation and had clear reasons, and we evaluated the opportunity, and as history indicates, it's something that we decided will work for us, and we intend to make work in an incredibly successful way. I also think it's important to understand this just wasn't about money. In my experience in life, or even in this role, certainly you make decisions about money, but money should follow. It shouldn't be in the lead. And so those are still part of our ethos, part of what we think about. We want to maximize our revenue, but we have this contiguous group that has a national platform. We don't need to be in four time zones to generate interest on the West Coast or really across the globe. And so that's been a hallmark. Who knows what will happen? And that's where I go back to one of my original statements, that we're always going to be attentive to what's happening around us. And perhaps there'll be some opportunity, but it needs to be one of philosophical alignment. And it's not something where we're actively out recruiting institutions right now.
Commissioner, on another very important subject, and that's the expansion of the CFP. I distinctly remember you talking about it because you felt it was important to include the West Coast in that. And that was one of your many arguments that a lot of people in college football gave a deaf ear to. Could you give us whatever you know right now, as this is all changing, about where we are as we look ahead to next year with the expanding CFP?
Well, you can imagine there are a few thoughts. One, I go back to well, probably early August 21, and there was an alliance formed and announced in a Zoom press conference. And then quickly we went into meetings and everything stopped. I think looking back, that was really unfortunate and unnecessary. And there wasn't a great deal of clarity around the why. The president's reengaged. Last year, I think probably you and I had a conversation in August about the renewed potential for the CFP format to be considered and expanded. That happened. You may recall one of the reasons I gave as commissioner of the Southeastern Conference is even here in the SEC, we wanted college football to be strong nationally, and we'd not seen a West of the Rockies participant in the playoff since, I believe, 2016. And so the expansion was about making sure we brought in Western football. Well, now what's happened is Western football has come into other conferences. The net of that is circumstances have changed. And I think it's wise for us to take a step back and reconsider what the format might look like given these changed circumstances. We've not met on that. I've not had any meaningful conversations, but I think we have to acknowledge that it is on everyone's mind pending the outcome of some of these additional membership movement pieces.
Is there anything about the expansion that changes in your estimation now with what has happened in recent days?
Well, it remains to be seen, but you know, how many FBS conferences will exist in 30 or 60 days, particularly as we head into next season, if you want to lengthen that time frame. We've been engaged in the right kind of conversations around future media opportunities, around the logistical issues and decisions related to the first round of games on campus, and how do we move then into bowl games. But we do have changed circumstances. Right now, we still have 10 FBS conferences, but there's obviously a great question about whether that will remain. And yeah, that could create a thought in my mind, and I think in others, about some level of adjustment being made. I do think the access we've created through the 12-team format still seems wise, but maybe there are elements and specifics of what was decided when we had clarity around 10 conferences that might need to be adjusted given what's happening right now.
We're chatting with the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey. We'll take a short break and come back with more right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Continue right now with the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference. Commissioner, we were talking about the CFP when we went to the break, and I'd like to give you a chance to elaborate on that. I realize nothing has really been done, but there are so many changes already. Could you pick up on that and talk about where you think we are and maybe what you would like to see, if anything, with alterations?
I'll go back to what I wanted to see and work to achieve with a group of colleagues, and that was a 12-team format that struck, I think, a unique balance between honoring conference champions and then providing increased access for the best teams who are not conference champions. And that was with an understanding of 10 FBS conferences. We have some independence, Notre Dame obviously being central there. Paul, what was really interesting to me is when that concept was introduced, rather than engage in feedback and conversation to try to improve, we just stopped. And instead of making the kind of improvements that are natural in any idea, concept, or format that could be introduced, we just stopped. And I've been an advocate well before the events of the last few weeks to say, let's look carefully at some of the decisions around seating, around location. Some of my other colleagues have contributed their ideas. I think those will help us improve. And now here we are with more membership movement, questions about how many conferences will exist. It just raises the questions that are not fully back to a starting point, about conference champion access, about how the bracket is seated, particularly the adjustment around Notre Dame not remaining as an independent, not having that top four seed status. Those matters need to be really dug into and understood. And to the extent we'll have clarity soon on the number of conferences, I think that can help inform our conversations. If we don't have clarity, those issues around format, seating, placement of teams will be probably a bit more drawn out. I'm one who thinks 12 teams can continue to work. It's really about what happens inside that 12-team format.
Commissioner, I would like to get your thoughts on the bigger picture of intercollegiate athletics, which so many people this week have come after, as you know, including not coming after it, but being concerned about it. And that was Charlie Baker, the new NCAA president. I know you have a very close dialogue with him, but could you comment on the bigger picture of what all this, I realize this is not your conference, but what all this looks like to people around the country when it just seems like a big money grab with everybody moving?
I don't know the motivations of others and who moved what and what phone calls were made. And I just have to be transparent about that. I've done well, I think, in explaining what happened with our expansion and the outreach from Jay Hartzell and Joe Harris, is they really said, we want to be a part of that. And as I said earlier, you know, money, TV went to the side as we thought about what's right and what's going to happen from a directional standpoint. You know, Charlie walked into a situation not of his own making. So he was, I think, an enormously popular governor of Massachusetts, a Republican in a more blue state, reelected. And at the end of his term, well, here's this NCAA opportunity. So you certainly have to give him a lot of credit for his willingness to jump into a big challenge. And now he's seeing how rapidly the landscape can change. Part of the reality is the NCAA is not assigned responsibility for deciding conference membership. And so there's a lot of finger pointing towards either to President Baker or towards the NCAA to say, well, you should do something. You know, the president of Baylor, who obviously is one of the Big 12 presidents and chancellors, chairs the NCAA Board of Governors. We haven't delegated that authority there. I do think, though, we have some issues that have to be addressed. You know, can Division I function as 300 and continuing growing 50 plus members? You know, there's like no cap. I expressed during our media days frustration. I'll echo that today. I sat in an NCAA council meeting in late June. It was the Tuesday and Wednesday right after the SEC had two of its baseball teams in the College World Series final. We had a report about some steps that I think reasonably the NCAA could take in better managing the name, image, and likeness area. You just heard from one of our student athletes that, you know what, it can work. He's got responsibilities now to businesses. He gets to activate around his learning experiences, yet we hear that it's not the healthiest circumstance. So we had this report, and then when asked for input from 40 plus leaders around that table who are members of the Division I Council, I was the only one who spoke. There we go with the most important issue pressing on how we support student athletes and facing college athletics. We're in a Division I Council meeting and no one other than me speaks to the issue. That was astounding to me. That's not a creation of Charlie Baker. That's not a creation of the Blue Disc. That is a responsibility that we share to help this enterprise get healthy. And so I accept that there is criticism. I don't think it's all well-informed. I think as people talk about, well, look, you can transfer as an institution. You can't transfer as a student athlete. No, actually, you can transfer as a student athlete. I think we have to be more intentional about our remarks. But where criticism resides, that's the reality. It is going to exist in an enterprise this big. I respect that Charlie's trying to work through some of the issues. I greatly appreciate the dialogue that he's initiated with myself and my colleagues. But all of us in leadership positions have to improve our ability to articulate a vision. That includes myself.
Commissioner, I don't know if I'm going to have time. You're going to have time to answer this in a short period. But I would like to ask you about whether this model can work because of many of the things that you have just said. The model that we're currently in is what we're talking about too big for that organization to be even a part of on the periphery.
Well, we need to understand, and it's like the SEC network. I'm the SEC commissioner, and you're the most popular talk show host, so we can go as long as you want to try to answer questions, right, if we can come to agreement.
I'll try. Commissioner, let's do that.
Let's engage in programming. All those guys in Bristol are okay at programming. You and I are better.
Absolutely. We will take a break. I want to get to that question because it is one that is vexing many, many people watching and listening right now. The commissioner continues right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.